Howard James on Exmouth Air.
It's big fun opening up the programme this morning in fine style, and can't shake the feeling. I've taken the tablets and I've rubbed the cream on, but it doesn't seem to have done any good. But there we are. Anyway, good morning. It's Howard James with the Sunday morning programme taking you through until midday today at just turned 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. It's very nice to have your company on this Sunday morning. Thank you very much indeed to Andy Judd for the weekend breakfast programmes. He'll be back with you next Saturday and Sunday morning. Saturday morning between 6 and 9 and Sunday morning between 7 and 10 o'clock. Right. Busy programme this morning between now and 12 o'clock. In a few moments' time, we'll be talking about Old Woodbury, the author of a book that's come out all about that. Roger Stokes is the man. He'll be talking about that. And incidentally, just slightly digressing a moment, last week, if you're listening to the programme, I did read out a message from Roger. He was in Norway at the time, and I didn't realise it was him till I got home and suddenly thought, ah! That's Roger Stokes from Norway. He's back with us on Terra Firma now. So he's going to be talking to us about Old Woodbury and the book he's written. That's in a few moments' time. We'll also be talking about the Exmouth Carnival Club logo competition. Gavin Roberts, he's been on this programme before. He's on again, and he's the man in charge. He'll be talking about that competition. And also the Sid Valley Biodiversity Group. Do you know anything about that? Didn't think so. We'll be talking about that. Chris Lockyer, who's the manager, will be mentioned. mentioning and chatting about that a little later on this morning. We'll just take a look at one or two things that happened on this day in years gone by. Some famous birthdays to look at. Some light press stories, if we've got time, and some surveys too. We'll have a comedy song and a rather appropriate one, I think. It's a very short one, and it's from, yes, Matt Lucas. We'll be doing that this morning. If we can throw in some cheery banter, we'll be doing well between now and midday today. We'll look at next week's programme, and also we'll be looking at what's on offer on this radio station between 12 noon and 12 midnight. Any important travel news, we'll bring that to you. If you want to get in touch, you can do. You can email on studio@exmouthair.fm, or you can text me on 07947211311, and standard rate supply. So I think we've sorted out everything now.
Boy, I never knew I could feel the way.
That's Jennifer Lopez and Baby I Love You. You tune to your favourite radio station. It's Exmouth Air, 106.4 FM around the Exmouth area. We're on 95 all around the Sid Valley. And also, not forgetting, 94.6, and that's around Cranbrook and the surrounding areas too. We're also on the internet. We're on the Android app and loads of other things as well. So no excuse for not listening to us this morning. So there. Right, let's talk to our first guest this morning. And he's called Roger Stokes. We mentioned him a few moments ago. He's an author of a book called Old Woodbury. Good morning to you, Roger.
Good morning, Howard. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I trust you are. And I trust you had a nice holiday in Norway.
Yes, it was a bit of a working holiday, but very nice. Thanks.
Good job you weren't in Spain then.
Well, it's just well this morning.
Yes. Anyway, moving on. I'm glad you had a good time, and it was nice to have the message, because I wasn't quite sure who Roger Stokes was until I got home. So I do apologise live on air for that. And I realised who you were afterwards, so that's fine. Anyway, right, talk to me about a little bit about you and how you got involved in writing in the first place.
Well, I've lived in Woodbury all my life, some 79 years nearly, and I've been a bit involved in Woodbury history over the years, and my family have been a bit involved previously, my father and my grandfather, and they had quite a stack of photographs here and other information. And when my father died in 1994, I had the opportunity to look through some of this stuff, and with the millennium coming up, I did a book for that, which was called Woodbury, the 20th Century Revisited, which contained about 400 photographs plus supporting text. And now I've just done this other one, which is a compilation of a series I did for the Exmouth Journal between 2007 and 2011. It just seemed a shame that they were stuck in the bottom of the hard drive of my computer and nobody could see them anymore.
And you're obviously well qualified, Roger, to do this because, as you say, you spent most of your life in Woodbury, so you've known what's been going on there for many a long year now.
Yeah, I'm only qualified in the sense that I've lived here. I'm not technically qualified, but I do like putting my own books together.
So where on earth do you start then when you want to write? So this is your, what, second book now?
Yes.
So where on earth, how do you start? How do you get going with the book in the first place?
Well, basically, I just start on page one and keep going.
But what about getting all the information that you need to put in the book? That must have been a nightmare, I would have thought.
Well, I've got about nearly 4,000 photographs of Woodbury going back to 1865.
Oh, my goodness.
I've got a good stock of material, and I try to put a bit of story to the pictures if I, you know, have the information or the knowledge.
Yeah. So the book that you've written two books now. Did it need encouragement from anybody to actually get you started on the first one?
No. What encouraged me for the first one was the fact that the millennium was coming up. I did the book in 1999, and it seemed such a shame to me that possibly one day all these photographs that I've got would be put on a bonfire by somebody else. And so I digitised them all first, and then decided I would, you know, make a record of some of what I've got.
So you're in the know as far as technology goes too?
Well, I struggle with that a bit.
Talk to me about the research then. I mean, did people volunteer to help you out with the book, i.e. with photographs or information?
Yes, I had a lot of local help, luckily, because Woodbury previously has been, up until about the 1960s, been a very rural parish, and the population largely stayed the same. So people turned out photos they had from under their beds, and all sorts of places, and let me scan them. So, you know, it's now all scanned, and the record can technically go on forever and not get burnt on a bonfire.
You mentioned the population there, Roger. Do we know roughly what the population is now of Woodbury itself?
Well, Woodbury Parish includes Woodbury, Salterton, and Exton, and the population roughly is 4,500 for the lot at the moment.
And how do you think it's changed over the years, if anything?
It's changed tremendously since my boyhood. Up until probably the late 50s, everybody in the village knew everybody else, for a start. And there was five herds of cows which traversed the village twice a day, every day, going to their fields, because the farm, for some reason, in all most cases then, was the opposite side of the village to where the farm was. So cows went in all directions, which caused a bit of a problem.
It's a very busy place now, isn't it? A lot of traffic goes through there for people who want to go towards Budley and even going to Exmouth rather than use the main road.
Yes, but too much traffic at the moment, but there we are. But, you know, I've got a photograph here of our herd of cows coming down the road past Woodbury School in 1962. Not a car in sight, but how it's changed since then.
So in the first book and in the second book, what's the earliest photographs that you've managed to get hold of?
Well, I've got family photographs going back to 1865 of family members.
So that's that is going back a long way, isn't it? And is Woodbury twin with anybody?
Yeah, Woodbury's actually twin with Bretfield-sur-Odon in Normandy.
And, of course, with the COVID going on, of course, you're not able to go over there and they're not able to come over here.
No, there's a few problems at the moment. I've got a neighbour who's actually a French lady, and she's going off next week to see her family, but it's the first time she's been able to since the COVID started.
How long did it take you to write the first book, and how long did it take you to write the second one?
I think the second one was a bit easier because I did have it all ready made. I just had to put it together. The second one I did in about 3 months. The first one, probably the best part of a year.
So in terms of both books, is it a mixture of pictures and words?
Yes. The first book was what you might call a slightly more serious book. Historically wise, the second one is got a bit of humour added, which is my sort of take on what's happened during my lifetime.
And in terms of books now, is there a third one coming?
Who knows? In between, I've done eight little A5 size booklets containing more of my photos, and I've also written a book on our years in Norway.
Ah, right. Hence the fact that you went over to Norway last week.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. So, where can people get hold of this book, and what's it called?
Well, my book, the latest book, is called Memories of Woodbury. And people, if they want one, they need to email me on my email address, which is... You may have it there, I don't know, but I'll tell you if you like.
Carry on. Yeah, no, I haven't in front of me, but if you want to give it out, that's fine.
Yes, it's rstokes, rstokes, at woodburydevon.co.uk.
You see, I'm thinking now, you've got two books under your belt, possibly maybe a third one. What about a video then of the history of the actual village itself and surrounding areas too?
Yes, there's a lot of information out there. I'm a member of the Woodbury History Society, and we've got a very large website which I actually control. And the information is there. As regards to video, it's not easy. There have been a couple done by a chap called Julian Ware, who's been showing us his films over the last 5 years at the History Society. He was an ex-television producer, so he's done some good films on Woodbury. And his family came from here in the beginning, and they've gone down very well. But for me to put together a video... You know, I'm more interested in the past than the present.
Now, the book's obviously doing very, very well, I understand, but you've still got more copies around.
Yeah, I've still got about 15 copies left.
Right. So, and it, presumably, from your point of view, that's good going.
I think it is, really. It was put on the market in end of May, and I had 100 copies printed, and 85 have already been sold.
You must be very delighted about that, and you know, it might spur you on to do the next one.
It may well do, but you always think when you do a book, you know, that's the last, and can I make it any better than the last one? And that's the difficult bit. You know, printing-wise, in this day and age, is not cheap. The first book I had done, luckily, was published by a company called Hallsgrove, which you may have heard of, and it's part of their Parish series books, which they did for the, more or less the whole Southwest. But the second one I've had to finance myself, and problem being, unless you sort of have 1,000 done, the price per book is quite expensive.
Give us the details again, if you will, Roger, for those people who might want to purchase it.
Yes. Well, the book actually costs $19.95 via my email address, which is rstokes@woodburydevon.co.uk.
Wonderful. Good stuff. Well, listen, I wish you very well, Roger, and look forward to the third one coming out.
Yes, well, we'll wait and see on that.
It's great to talk to you this morning. Thank you ever so much, and I'm glad you had a good time in Norway last week.
Okay, thanks.
All right, you're very welcome. There we are. That was... oh, by the way, before you go, Roger, stay safe, won't you?
Oh, I'll try to, yeah, and
you. All right, thank you very much indeed. There we are. That's a gentleman called Roger Stokes, who lives in Woodbury. He's the author of a book entitled Old Woodbury.
This is the passion, wild and untamed, burning in flames. Right then I knew you wanted me. Burning in flames of desire. You came, you saw, you taunted me. High priestess, powers anointed me. This is the torch, this is the flame. This is the passion, wild and untamed.
This is Exmouth Air.
Yes, Stargazer from Neil Diamond, and before that, Flames of Desire from ABC. You tuned to your favourite radio station at 27 minutes before 11 o'clock. Just a reminder that Buddy Holly, I think, is back from his holidays, so he'll be with you between 12 and 2 this afternoon with the Sunday Requests and Dedication programme, and we'll open up the lines of communication. That's texting and emailing in about an hour or so's time, so never fear. Now, good news will be good news if you're going to be travelling on the motorways and you see some roadworks. And there's nothing worse, is there, than having to drop down to 50 miles an hour for a long period of time. And I will never, ever forget travelling on the M1 in Nottinghamshire and being reduced to 50 miles an hour for 13 and a half miles. I know we can play when it's 2 or 3, but 13 and a half miles... Dear, well, all that's going to change, and I don't exactly know when it's going to change, but I think it's in the not-too-distant future. Highways England have said that they're going to increase the speed that you'll be able to go through these roadworks on all motorways from 50 miles an hour to 60 miles an hour, which is, I suppose, all good stuff, isn't it? All good, stops all the traffic bunching up and everything like that. So it's good news. It's good news. Now then... I love this. Bangers and mash was apparently our top lockdown food, as one in three got back to proper home cooking. Chicken curry was second and cottage pie third. Tummy's rumbling already. Now, traditional British grub was most popular overall, followed by Italian and Indian. A certain organisation that sells food also found sales of pork soared by 690%, beef 519%, and herbs and spices 100% from March the 23rd to June the 30th. And we add on average two new dishes to our repertoires. That's a long word for this time in the morning, but there we are. Food psychologist Dr. Christy Ferguson said people unable to see pals tried to recreate feelings of comfort, relaxation and joy through meals. Absolutely. Bangers and mash. Nothing like it is the bangers and mash. But with a bit of onion and a bit of gravy thrown in too.
That moon is big and bright, it's a supernatural delight. Everybody's dancing in the moonlight, dancing in the moonlight. Everybody's feeling warm and bright, it's such a fine natural sight. Everybody's dancing in the moonlight.
With Exmouth Air on social media. Just search for Exmouth Air.
All the ladies fell for Rudolph Valentino. He had a beano back in those palmy days. He knew every time you meet an icy creature, you've got to teach her hot-blooded Latin ways. But even Rudy would have felt the strain of making smooth advances in the rain. All this year I'm off to sunny Spain.
Viva España!
I'm taking the Costa Brava plane.
Viva España!
If you'd like to check the matador
in some cool cabana
and meet señoritas by the score. España, por favor. Quite by chance to hot romance I found the answer. Flamenco dancers are far the finest bit. There was one who whispered, "Ooh, hasta la vista." Each time I kissed him behind the castanet, he rattled his maracas close to me. In no time I was trembling at the knee. All this year I'm off to sunny Spain.
Hey, viva España!
I'm taking the Costa Brava plane.
Hey, viva España!
If you'd like to check the matador
in San Pool Campania
and meet señoritas by the score. España, por favor. When they first arrive, the girls are pink and pasty, but also tasty as soon as they go brown. I guess they know every fellow will be queuing to do the wooing his girlfriend won't allow. But still, I think today's a lucky day. That's why I've learned the way to shout, "Olé!" All this year I'm off to sunny Spain.
Hey, we!
Taking the Costa Brava plane.
Hey, viva España!
If you'd like to check the matador
in some cool cabana
and meet señoritas by the score. España, por favor.
La 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 la. Hey, viva España! La la.
Yeah, there we are. Viva España from Sylvia. And before that, it was Dancing in the Moonlight from Jubal featuring Nimi. So there, please don't ask me to say that again on this Sunday morning. So there, it's 19 minutes, near enough 19 minutes before 11 o'clock. You're tuned to your favourite radio station. We're Exmouth Air. We're on 106.4 FM, and that's around the Exmouth and Budley Salterton areas. We're also on 95 FM around the Sid Valley and plus 94 point. I'm doing all this from memory, you know, so you'll have to bear with me. 94, I've got it written down here at all. 94.6 around Cranbrook, Broadclist and Ale. Beer. We're also on Alexa. We're on I'm struggling now, you probably noticed. We're on Alexa, and also we're on the internet, and we're on the app as well. We're on the Google app. So yes, that's I wish I'd have written it all down, but I think we got through it all right and nobody noticed. So there. Right, let's talk to Gavin Roberts, who's in charge of the Exmouth Carnival Club logo competition. Good morning, Gavin.
Good morning.
Well, very good. How are you? You all right?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
Well, good.
I'm happy at this time.
It doesn't seem 12 months since we last spoke about Exmouth Carnival and organising it all, etc., etc. But now we are where we are. We're talking particularly, we'll come to that in a minute, with regard to the logo competition, which all sounds very good. So, basically, you're still in charge of everything then?
Yeah, pretty much. After sort of stepping in and trying to save it last year, committee members came forward and appointed me chairman of the committee. So the previous chairman, he was relieved of his duties, and I've sort of taken over.
Well done to you. All a bit daunting, I would have thought, Gavin.
Certainly so, yeah. There's a lot more to it than I first anticipated.
Oh, dear. Did you wake up in the middle of the night one night and sort of go, "Oh, no, what have I done? What have I let myself in for?"
No, not at all. It's all been quite quite fun, really. And there has been parts of it you think, "Oh, you know, is this going to come in? Will that happen? Will this happen? Will they do this? Will they do that?" But no, on the night last year, it all just came together beautifully and everything went ahead as planned. It was lovely.
Now, this Exmouth Carnival Club logo, who had the idea for that? Was it you?
No, actually, it was a member of the community back in, beginning of the year, I put a post out on the Carnival page, just asking what people wanted to see. Now, I admit I've not been wholly active with Carnival this year, but with the COVID-19, there's not really been a lot to do because everything was sort of cancelled. So I thought, whilst we've got the chance and we're not planning carnivals as such, we've got time to try and get a logo up and running. Because I don't believe Carnival ever had a logo as such. I could be wrong on that, but I know we don't have at the moment.
So when is the deadline then for all of this?
Right, the deadline originally was the 2nd of August, but we are going to extend that to Saturday the 15th of August.
Right, so just gives people a little bit longer.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Give people a little bit longer, and just, you know, give people a chance to get an idea on paper and either get it sent to me via post, email, or we've now set up a mobile phone for the carnival where we could give out the number and people just send a picture.
Okay, we'll get to those details in a few moments' time. But, I mean, what's the criteria of all this? Have the people got to be of a certain age? Has it got to be bright? Has it got to, for example, be cheery or both or what?
Yeah, we'd like it to be bright and cheery, something that's going to be quite noticeable. If people just see the logo, they'll say, oh, that's Exmouth Carnival, without actually reading too much. Obviously that'll take time for people to get round and know the logo, but there's no age criteria on this whatsoever. We're asking absolutely anybody and everybody to get involved and help us to give Carnival a logo. We thought we'd ask the community to get involved rather than going to a company that could design a logo for us, purely because that's going to cost. Obviously, if that's costing, it's coming out of the Carnival Fund, which also comes off next year's Carnival.
You mentioned, Gavin, about getting the community involved. Are we strictly talking the Exmouth area, or if people live a little bit further away, can they take part?
Yeah, if people live even a bit further away, if they wish to, that's not a problem. There's no criteria as to area. I was looking originally keeping it local, but then understanding that people do travel into Exmouth for the carnival from the more outside areas such as Exeter, Cranbrook, and, you know, all the way around us, really.
So
yeah, anyone from anywhere.
So when are you going to announce the winner then?
Right, well, if we do the deadline at the 15th of August, we will announce the winner on the 22nd of August. That'll give us a chance to look through all the entries that we've received and narrow it down, and then we shall put it out for public vote online, and perhaps hopefully get yourselves involved if we can on that one. And then whichever the public choose to be the winner will be the one that we use.
Well, I was just going to say, you said us. So is it a case of you and maybe other members, say the committee, going to look first, and then is it going to be passed on to what the people think, or how's it going to work then?
Yeah, we're going to get them all in. We're going to narrow them down to the final either 3 or 5, depending on how many entries get and what we have got. Then those final 3 or 5 will be put up to the public vote, and then it'll be the public's vote that will decide the overall winner.
And what's the prize then, Gavin?
Well, there's no prize as such, but the winners will be the ones that their logo will be used across anything to do with the carnival, whether it be on signage, letterheads, emails, pretty much anything to do with carnival, the logo will be on there.
And presumably this will stay for quite a few years then?
I'm hoping so, yeah, that's the idea. I don't feel there's much point in getting a logo up and running just to change it in a couple of years. We want a logo that people are going to recognise with the carnival, and hopefully, you know, across the whole of Devon, people will look at it and, I'll say, just be realise and recognise that it is Exmouth Carnival.
This COVID-19 has obviously affected a lot of things, including what you do. How badly affected are you?
Well, obviously this year we've cancelled Carnivals this year. Any fun days up to now are cancelled. I am sort of, I'm playing with the idea of trying to organise some sort of fun day, but also at the moment I'm quite fearful that we could be in a second lockdown at some point. It's a bit awkward one really. Do we organise it just to cancel it, or do we just lay off it altogether until we completely can go ahead with it?
So it's a limbo situation for you at the moment, and you're hoping that things... Let's hope we don't get another lockdown, but you're hoping that that won't happen and things will be... all systems go maybe for next year.
Hopefully so. We are sort of planning bits for next year already, just to get things put into place. But nothing major at the moment.
How frustrated have you been then, Gavin, with regard to all of this and the fact that you were looking forward to a carnival and it's not going to happen and you've got to, you know, start again and get ready for hopefully next year's?
Not so much frustrated. It's more upsetting than anything, really. You know, you sort of put your work into it and then just over a phone call, it's cancelled, it's all done with. Oh, okay.
Right.
But it's totally understandable as to what, why we have to do it and what we've got to do.
Yes. Give us the details again about this logo competition and where people can get all the information and where they have to send it to.
Yep. Well, there's a few ways of sending it to us. Is via email at, well, to exmouthcarnivalclub@gmail.com. We have a mobile number if you wanted to just put it on paper and send us a picture, to 07599 442 996, or if you're unable to do that on a mobile phone or email, you can send it to our house, which is 42 Cheviswood Avenue, and that's obviously Exmouth, EX84HG.
Wonderful stuff.
Or there's also the Carnival Club pages on Facebook as well. You can send them over to there.
Fantastic. Good stuff. Gavin, thanks for coming on the line this morning and talking to us about that. Hope you get masses of entries in, and I'm sure we'll all look forward to seeing the winning one plastered all over the place.
Yeah, it'll be nice. That's the idea.
Good stuff. All right, Gavin, thank you so much this morning.
No worries, thank you. Thank you very much.
And whatever you do, stay safe, won't you?
Yes, likewise.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye now.
There we are. That was Gavin Roberts, who's in charge of the Exmouth Carnival Club logo competition.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now, heaven knows. From those little radios.
Yes, Anything Goes, of course, Harper's Bazaar, at 5 and a half minutes before 11 o'clock. Some things that happened on this day in history you might be interested to know about. Winston Churchill resigned as British Prime Minister on this day in 1945. Apollo 15 was launched from Cape Kennedy. That was the fourth manned landing on Moon. It was on this day in 1971. AT&T and BT merged to form a joint venture, all to do with internet systems. That was on this day in 1998. Israel's London embassy was bombed, injuring 14 people on this day in 1994. Eva Perón, the wife of Argentinian president, died on this day in 1952. And the first televised suicide took place on top of a New York building, would you believe, on this day in 1938. The FBI in America was formed on this day in 1908. And Liberia was founded on this day in 1847. In 1803, the world's first public railway opened in London, which was called the Surrey Iron Railway. I didn't know that, but you live and learn, don't you? 1992 on this day, Britain honoured its dead in the Falklands War. UK announced it would ban diesel cars by 2040 on this day in 2017. And Sir Paul McCartney performed a secret gig at the Cavern Club in Liverpool on this day in 2018. In 1609, English maths expert Thomas Harricot was the first person to draw a map of the moon. And the Canoe Club opened in England on this day in 1867. And lights were seen flashing on Jupiter on this day in 1983. Must have been having a disco up there, but we shall never know, do we? Or will we? So there we are, one or two things that happened on this day in history. And more to come in part two of the programme. Hopefully you'll stay with me. We'll also be talking to the Sidvale Biodiversity Group, Chris Lockyer. He's the manager. We'll be talking about that. That's in part two. To take us up to the news at the top of the hour at 11 o'clock, let's have Belinda Carlisle. Leave a light on, please.
Take my hand, tell me
James on Exmouth Air.
Yes, let's go round again. That was the Average Right Band, starting up part two of the programme this morning. It's Howard James with the Sunday morning programme, taking you through until midday today, coming up to 7 minutes past 11 o'clock. Very nice to have you company this morning. Just a reminder, between 12 and 2 this afternoon, hopefully he's back from his holidays, Buddy Holly with the Sunday Request and Dedication programme. And we'll open up the lines of communication for that. That's texting and emailing in roughly 40, 45 minutes' time. Still to come on this programme, between now and midday, we'll be talking about the Sid Valley Biodiversity Group. Chris Lockyer is the manager of that. He'll be talking about what that is and its history, etc., etc. We'll also take a look at some famous birthdays today, some light press stories, some more of those and some surveys too. We'll have our comedy song, which is not too far away, and if we can carry on some... We've been doing it in part one. We have. Good. I'm going to try and do it in part two, too. Cheer and banter we're talking here. We'll look at next week's programme and also what's happening on this radio station between 12 noon and 12 midnight. Also, I'll be telling you how you can... Normally, I'd say to you how you can come into the studio, but, of course, with the COVID-19, we're not doing that. We're talking to people, as you probably gathered by now, over the telephone. So if you want to come on air and talk about a club or society or you're doing something, we'll give you that information between now and 12 o'clock. Any important travel news? news. We'll bring you that. You can text me if you want to on 07947 211311, standard rate supply, or you can email at studio@exmouthair.fm. So a couple of ways you can get in touch today. And the other thing, and I know I mention it most weeks, but for those of you who don't know, particularly our newer listeners around the Sid Valley and also around the Cranbrook areas, then how you can listen again to your favourite radio programmes, if there's a particular radio programme, and most of them are in our system of Listen Again. So if you can't manage to listen live, we'll give you an idea of how you can listen again. And basically the idea is you'll be able to listen after 24 hours, the programme's gone out, then you'll be able to listen to your heart's content, day or night, for a month, and you've got a month's worth of programmes. But I'll give you that details in detail, if you see what I mean. And that's between now and midday.
Daytime comes, bring in the light, giving the sun to nature's earth, beautiful sounds, and a bluebird sings, a baby's cry, yeah. It's a brand new birth, it's a brand new birth. And the little girl smiled, when the little boy smiled, then the woman smiled, cause the man had smiled, at the great big world was smiling. Time comes, heaven's curtains drawn, stars shine bright, way up above, children pray, and the workers rest, peace and quiet. It's people in love, yes, people in love. And the little girl laughed, when the little boy laughs, then the woman laughs, as the man is laughing, and the great big world is smiling. Distant land, a fearsome fight, soldiers praying, praying for peace, suffering pain, and giving their lives for man's greed. Oh God, make it cease. God, please make it cease. And the little girl cried, when the little boy cried, then the woman cried, cause the man was crying, and this great big world was crying.
Smith Air.
changed my life. Baked potato showed me the way. If you want to know what is wrong from right, you must listen to what potatoes say.
Wash your hands and stay indoors.
Thank you, baked potato.
Only visit grocery stores.
Thank you, baked potato.
And if you want to have a better day, you must listen to what the baked potatoes say.
Keep your distance, make some space.
Thank you, baked potato.
Remember not to touch your face.
Thank you, baked potato. And if you want to have a better day, you must listen to what the baked potatoes say.
I did warn you it was a short song, didn't I? There we are. Comedy tune, all but short it was, for today. That was Baked Potato from Mr. Matt Lucas. He on television fame, you know. I don't have to read all the things he's been in, but we'll be here till Tuesday if we do. But nevertheless, there it was. One of the shortest songs I've ever played on this radio station. I've been here, what, 4 or 5 years, but there we are. Anyway, moving on. If you're clock watching, it's 14 and a half minutes past 11 o'clock in a few, well, say a few moments' time. In about a quarter of an hour's time, we'll be talking about the Sid Valley Biodiversity Group. Chris Lockyer is the manager of that. He'll be coming on the line to tell us all. Now, apparently, British engineers have created the first uncuttable material. It's been inspired by grapefruit skin and shells. Would you believe it? You have to, because it's true. Ceramic spheres encased in cellular aluminium blunt any angle grinder or drill through vibrations. Named Proteus, after the shape-changing Greek god, it reacts more like an animal, its inventors say. The international team believe it could be used for armour and safety gear. Dr. Stefan Sidlowski, please don't ask me to read that again, of Durham University said it could have lots of useful and exciting applications. So there we are, a British engineer. Britain has discovered this, the first uncuttable material, inspired by not just anything, grapefruit skin and shells. Would you believe that? So there. Now then, I mentioned a few moments ago about coming on air, not coming in the studio, because we're not doing that at the moment because of what's going on. But if you want to come on air and talk about a club or society or something you're doing or going to try and do, then you're more than welcome. Now, I can tell you that I'm about a month ahead with my interviews at the moment. So anything past a month's time, if there's something coming up you want to plug, then you're more than welcome. And if you want to do that, then what I suggest you do is get in contact with me now, because we haven't opened the lines as far as the request and dedication programme goes yet, because we'll be doing that in half an hour's time. So if you belong to a club or society and you would like some airtime on this radio station, don't forget, we're covering a wider area now into the Sid Valley and also around Cranbrook and Elsmere, apart from Exmouth and Budley and Woodbury. So quite a big area now we're going out to. So if you have a club in any of those areas, and that includes Timoth and Dawlish as well, not forgetting, then you are more than welcome to get in touch. It's very easy to do. You can do it now. I'll give you a window of about 25 minutes, half an hour. If you want to get in touch, you can text me on 07947 211311, standard rate supply, or you can email at studio@exmouthair.fm. So that's anything connected with a club or society that you would like publicity on. Maybe you're just starting a club or society you would like to get going, and you, courtesy of the airwaves of this radio station, like to get it off the ground. Or if you're well established and you've got something coming up of importance, well, it doesn't have to actually be of importance. It can be just something very, very straightforward. If you feel you would like some publicity on this radio station of an event or whatever it may be, then all you need to do, as I say, is get in touch. I'll give you the details again. You can text me on 07947 211311, standard rate supply, or you can email at studio@exmouthair.fm. Now, if you do that between now and, say, 11:45, then I'll take a note of all your details and I'll make sure I get back to you as soon as I possibly can, and probably be to sometime tomorrow, I say. So never fear, Howard's here. He will get in touch with you. So there we are. If you're sort of humming and hawing and think, well, I'd like some publicity on whatever, I'm a little bit, you know, undecided what to do, then do it, please. We are community radio. That's what we're here for. So please do that. Get in touch with me. Come on air and plug something. Doesn't matter how big or how small. You are more than welcome.
waiting for us, girl. It ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Between the parted pages and repressed in love's hot fevered iron, like a striped pair of pants. MacArthur's Park is melting in the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again. Oh no. I recall the yellow cotton dress foaming like a wave on the ground around your knees. Like tender babies in your hands, and the old men playing checkers by the trees. MacArthur's Park is melting in the dark, all the sweet green ice is flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have the recipe again.
melting in the dark. All the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again.
This is Exmouth Air.
Yes, I drove all night to get to you. Did you have a car like that? I did. There we are. And it wasn't very far either. That was not only the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra in there and a cast of 1,000, but Roy Orbison featuring the voices of Ward Thomas. And before that, a classic. Did you notice we went from a very short song to a very long song, over 7 minutes, MacArthur Park, from Richard Harris, on this Sunday morning, so from one extreme to another, at more or less exactly 11:30 on your favourite radio station, we're Exmouth Air. Let's talk to our next guest this morning, Chris Lockyer, who's heavily connected with the Sid Valley Biodiversity Group. Very good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, Howard.
Well, it's very nice to have you come in this morning. Thank you for coming on the phone and talking about something that, I'll be quite honest, I knew very little about before I did chat to you. But just give us a bit about your background before we go into the actual biodiversity group and why you got involved in this in the first place.
Okay, well, I've actually got a sort of engineering background, but I moved to Sidmouth about, I suppose, 3.5 years ago and got involved in a number of different things. And one of the things I got involved with is the Sidmouth Science Festival, which is an annual event that takes place in October. This year, we're not quite sure what we're doing for obvious reasons, but it also has a number of other events that take place throughout the year. And one of those was a thing called the Clean Growth Project, or Clean Growth for Sidmouth Project. And in February, just before the lockdown happened, we had a whole series of events which were really all about how do we basically get good, healthy economic activity, but without causing damage to the environment. And that led to a group of people sort of talking a bit about biodiversity. And we got together as a group from the Science Festival, but also the Vision Group for Sidmouth and the Sidmouth Arboretum and also the Town Council. And as it happens, one of the other hats I wear is I'm also a Town Councillor for Sidmouth and Vice Chair of the Environment Committee. So all of those things sort of came together in a sort of natural way. And we decided that we ought to form a biodiversity group for Sid Valley to try and look at how we can enhance that. And actually, it was already identified, actually, as one of the objectives from the neighbourhood plan that Sidmouth put together a few years ago.
And as far as the biodiversity group goes, is it sort of unique to the Sid Valley, or are there others dotted around not only this county, but maybe other counties too?
Oh, it's a very topical thing. There's an awful lot of people interested in biodiversity at the moment, and in fact, there's a Devon has a biodiversity action plan, and a lot of other places where you are in Exmouth, I'm sure there will be a group that are interested in biodiversity because it's a really important topic.
And you're presumably just covering sort of the Sid Valley area, really?
Yes, we are covering the Sid Valley, so that will include obviously Sidmouth, but also Sidbury and Sidford. And also the other little hamlets that all exist in the Sid Valley.
Are we more aware of what's going on in the world now than we were maybe even a year or so ago?
I think one of the things that COVID has taught us, I think, is the importance of nature. I think a lot of people were aware of it, clearly, and it's not sort of new, but I think there's been a different connection to nature because a lot of people have really appreciated being able to get outside and walk and being frustrated that they weren't able to when they were told to stay indoors for 23 hours a day.
And when we had the lockdown, people were saying to me, you know, there's one thing that we can hear now which we couldn't hear before, and that was something as simple as birdsong. Because of all the traffic that used to be around, it used to get sort of out in the background. But now, well, I say not so much now, but when we had the full lockdown, people could hear birdsong again.
Yeah, absolutely, they could. It was really, really interesting. I know I'm very fortunate. I know not everybody is, I know, but I've got a nice garden, and so I was able to get out into the garden during lockdown and get some fresh air. And yes, absolutely, I could hear huge amounts of birdsong, which was really nice to hear.
And you think we've sort of basically feeling closer to nature than we did before?
I think there is a increasing. Obviously, the other thing that goes alongside this, of course, is the whole conversation about climate change. And that is also leading to an increased awareness of what we as the human species are doing to the planet. And all of those things are making us perhaps appreciate what we've got. And I think that's really the whole idea of the biodiversity group, is to try and, first of all, find out what we've got, and then, if you like, try and conserve it and try and enhance the biodiversity that we've got.
Do you think, going back to climate change, that, we sort of swept it under the carpet, if you like, for the want of a better phrase, before David Attenborough came along with Blue Planet?
I think that, obviously, he did a huge amount to raise awareness of, and you know, some of the photography was just mind-blowing that he could show. But, of course, climate change is not new. No, people have been talking about it for decades. And, you know, the evidence is getting, the evidence is really indisputable by anybody who looks at it seriously. So we definitely have an issue. And, obviously, what we're trying to do is to control the release of carbon dioxide into the environment, and obviously all the talk about electric cars and renewable energy, all that's obviously focusing in that direction.
Do you think for a long time now that youngsters have not been too interested because they've got other things to do in life, or did have, rather than sort of think about what was going on with nature and climate change? But a certain lady came along called Greta Thunberg, didn't she? And she seems to have changed everything and changed people's, or young people's, ideas.
I think she has. I think, again, as is always the case, there was a proportion of young people who were engaged in this conversation, but I think that she has become, a young Swedish girl, very, very, very young she was when she first started, has certainly had an enormous impact and been very newsworthy, and therefore people have noticed her, and her name recognition now must be huge, must be quite extraordinary for her as an individual.
Have you done sort of individual surveys about certain things, and if so, on what things?
Well, the group itself was formed really in June. That's when we wrote out a sort of terms of reference for what the group was going to do, and the first step of the process really is to investigate what we've got. So we have started to do some surveys. We're piggybacking on other organizations as and when we can. But the idea really is to encourage people to getting engaged. So it's partly about the sort of jargon term that's used occasionally, citizen science. And I think what we're trying to do, if you like, is to encourage people to actually look. Now, for some people, I could show them a whole mass of sort of different kinds of butterfly and they would know exactly which was which. But most people don't know that. Now, they'll know one or two, and they'll know one or two trees, and they'll know one or two flowers. So it's quite hard work for some people to actually know what they're looking at. So one of the things we're trying to do is to basically encourage people to look and see and help them understand what they're looking at, so they can actually participate more fully. So use the skills we've got. Now, if your skills are detailed and technical, great, we'll use you. If they're not, we'll try and teach you. I personally am no expert in butterflies, but as it happens, there is actually right at this moment a butterfly watch going on, that people are being encouraged to go out into their gardens, assuming that they've got them, or into parks if you haven't got one, and actually look at what butterflies you can see. So I actually did that on Friday, I think it was, before it was raining. And there's a cheat sheet that they produced, and you can go around, and I was able to look, and I saw, I think, six different kinds of butterfly: a peacock, a gatekeeper, a meadow brown, a green-veined white, and a small tortoiseshell. And if you'd asked me to describe all those butterflies a week ago, I wouldn't have been able to. I'd have been able to tell you a couple, maybe the peacock and the tortoiseshell, but a lot of the other ones I wouldn't have known. So I've actually educated myself and actually was able to report this to the butterfly conservation group, who are putting together a map across the entire country. Now, we'll extract bits that we'll use for Sid Valley, but, it is a national thing. But other things, we're actually doing surveys of hedges, for example, looking at trees. And one of the things, of course, that, again, many people will be aware of, is that there is a big issue with ash dieback at the moment. So a lot of ash trees currently exist in hedgerows, and unfortunately, because they're dying back, they will ultimately have to be removed, and we're going to miss large trees in our hedgerows, which will change the landscape. So what we're trying to do is to understand what we've got and maybe allow other types of trees to grow in the place where the ash was.
It sounds as though, on a personal level, that you're learning more about nature too.
Oh, absolutely. There's always more to be learned. And in fact, you know, in preparation for this interview, I actually came across an interesting quote, which I was going to share with you. And that was going back to the 1980s. There was a couple of researchers, I'm not sure where they were from, but they basically said that species are to ecosystems what rivets are to a plane wing. Losing one might not be a disaster, but each loss adds to the likelihood of a serious problem. And I think that sums up quite nicely, I think, what the issue is that, you know, we've heard about certain species being eliminated, and, you know, one rather strange, weird beetle that no one's ever heard of, you know, if we lose that, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, progressively, one by one, that becomes more and more of an issue because nature is in balance, and if you remove certain things from that, the food chain and from everything else, you can potentially cause some serious issues. And I think actually come back to the ash and maybe, of course, the elms. You know, if you imagine that we only had ash trees and elm trees in this country, we'd chosen not to grow anything else. Of course, now we'll be looking at a disaster because all the elms have already gone, or a lot of them have, and the ashes are going. So that diversity of trees is really important to maintaining our landscape and making sure that, you know, we have a diversity that I think creates the environment we want to live in.
Now, I'm thinking specifically here about things like bees, because I had a gentleman on the line not that long ago who's a beekeeper in East Budley, in East Devon, and he was saying that if we hadn't got bees around, we wouldn't really have any food. So it is very critical, isn't it, that we preserve and keep these creatures going.
Absolutely. Bees are a big issue because they are key pollinators. There are other pollinators, but bees are key pollinators for an awful lot of the food that we, as you say, we eat. And one of the things, actually, the Sidmouth Town Council, because as I said, I also am involved with the Sidmouth Town Council, one of the things that we're looking at doing is changing the way in which we manage the verges, the grass verges. At the moment, often they're just cut, you know, every 2 weeks, and what that does is it removes a lot of possible habitats for bees and for other insects, and also a lot of wildflowers, which could be the food for those things as well. And so next year, what we're going to do as a town council is manage those verges in a very different way. We'll cut a strip so that we can sort of demonstrate to people we haven't abandoned it. But large areas will be left to just grow, particularly in the springtime when this is so critical. And you'll see a very different series of open spaces with quite, you know, tall grass and wildflowers and other things growing, which will definitely enhance help the insects. Where it's sort of next to a road, which where it's safety critical, obviously we'll have to cut it. But where we can leave it, where without impacting road safety, we are going to now leave them to grow taller.
So, sorry, go on.
Cut.
How, as far as funding goes, I mean, as far as the organisation goes, you obviously you've got to have money to keep on going. How are you going about that?
Well, at the moment, it's entirely run by volunteers, and so we are. We will be looking for some funding because, of course, as I said, the first step is to do some investigation. And that's relatively cheap. You know, everyone can do a survey of what's in their garden or in the hedgerows, and it doesn't really cost very much. But, of course, once we've done that, we'll be looking at the data that we've to see what we've actually got. And one of the things that the Devon Biodiversity Plan is doing is looking at certain species that are underrepresented. They should be in the Sid Valley, for example, but they're not. And that would then involve potentially working with landowners and planting trees and doing other things that would actually encourage certain species to grow. And that may cost money. So then we will be looking for grants or donations. And part of the Sid Valley Biodiversity Group, one of the groups that were subgroups we've set up, is a funding group, and that there will be people who will be looking at funding. At the moment, we haven't really done much because we haven't needed much money, but we will in due course.
You mentioned volunteers earlier, so I take it you do need some people to help you out. How would they go about that?
Well, I think that what we're doing at the moment is doing surveys. So, you know, what I did in my garden on Friday, you know, anyone can do, and, you know, if you have more specialist knowledge, well, obviously we welcome you. We are working closely with groups such as the Sidmouth Arboretum. We're working with the Sid Vale Association, the Vision Group for Sidmouth, the Sidmouth in Bloom. There's a whole bunch of organisations, all of whom have some interest in this topic. And so, no, they will be off, no, that some of their members will be volunteering. But the idea really is to try and get as many people as possible to go out and survey what they can see. And as I say, it could be as simple as in your garden. If you've got a pond in your garden, look at what wildlife you've got there. We're trying to get schools involved. So, yes, absolutely. If people are interested, then we can definitely use them to help those surveys. And then in due course, when we need to get maybe some actual physical work done, again, those people can if they're able, can volunteer for that too.
Right, so what do they need to do? How can they get in touch and find out more about the group?
Well, the Sidmouth Science Festival, as I said, that's where it started for me at least. If you go onto the website, you'll find the link to the biodiversity group. The Vision Group for Sidmouth, likewise, they also have a link. But there's a couple of email addresses. I hesitate to sort of give them out because they may be quite hard to sort of understand if you're not haven't got a pen and pencil ready. But one of two of the key email addresses are Charles Sinclair. So that's Charles as in Charles, Sinclaire. Clair 8@gmail.com. And another one is JWB, that's JWBEE, project@gmail.com. So those are two email addresses. If you write to either of those or look on the two websites I mentioned, you should find some contact details where you can actually volunteer if you'd like to.
And how was the COVID? We touched on it earlier, but you're using technology quite a bit now, aren't you?
Yeah, expert on Zoom now, because like everybody else seems to be. I've been
indeed.
I don't know how many times I've been using Zoom, but I have Zoom meetings for the council, I have Zoom meetings for the science festival, I have Zoom meetings for the biodiversity group, and also with my family. So I think that's what we've been using. In terms of, you know, COVID, I don't think it's made any difference particularly to biodiversity, although of course, I suppose, as you mentioned earlier, the fact that no one's around has probably helped the environment a little bit, because certainly we've been less disruptive to the environment through, you know, fewer people driving their cars around. But I think that's a sort of short-term effect. I think, you know, obviously things are getting back to, you know, slowly back to some degree of normality. So I don't think there's been a huge impact specifically on biodiversity from COVID. But obviously it's affected us and what we can do.
And how far ahead are you looking here? Are you sort of looking really far ahead? And where you think the organisation's going to go from here?
Well, it's early days, because we've only been going for literally almost a month. So what we are hoping to do is to do annual surveys of what we, the key sort of areas that we are trying to focus upon. And that will be looking specifically at species, so it's, you know, certain things that may or may not be around, as well as habitats. So again, this is basically piggybacking what the Devon Biodiversity Plan will be doing. And so there's certain habitats, and again, I've got some, you know, there's alder and willow wet woodland, which is one which actually exists in the Sid Valley. It's one of the ones that we will be looking at. And obviously we've got cliffs in Sidmouth, so we're looking at, you know, what's growing on the cliffs. We haven't got freshwater reed beds, for example. That's part of the Devon biodiversity plan, but we haven't got them, so we obviously won't be looking at them. So we'll be looking at both species and environments. And one of the areas of Sidmouth that is the NAP, which is a sort of an open wild area right in the middle of Sidmouth. And because it's next to quite a lot of different people who are interested in this, there's quite a lot of detailed surveys that are going to go on seeing what's in the Knapp in terms of, you know, the plant life, you know, the animal life, the bird life, the insect life, the amphibian life, you know, even the sort of lichens and fungi. You know, there'll be a detailed survey of that particular area so that we can actually get a good baseline. Now, in terms of how that matures over the years, you know, it's hard to tell at this stage, but clearly this is it is definitely a long-term project. It's a long-term issue because we're going to have to deal with the consequences of climate change. Even if we stop, you know, burning hydrocarbons now, the legacy is going to carry on for quite a long time. So we all know about sea level rising, and we all know about temperature rising. So that will have an impact on the environment, and we can try and mitigate that to some degree by helping.
Busy man, busy year coming up by the sounds of it, and I'm sure we all wish you the very best with the organisation. As you said, you haven't been going very long, but I'm sure we all wish you well on it.
Well, thanks so much indeed. It is fascinating, and as you mentioned earlier, I'm keen on this. I grew up in rural North Devon, and so was always close to nature, so it's always been an interest of mine, but I would never claim necessarily to be an expert in any one species. So doing the garden butterfly count was really quite interesting. It was quite frustrating, actually, because they move too fast. You can't often see what they are, but every now and again they'll settle on a flower and you can take a photograph and identify them.
Right, give us those two emails again, if you will, please, Chris, of how people can get in touch if they want to find out more and get involved.
Okay, the first one is Charles Sinclair, Sinclair, 8, number 8, at gmail.com, and JWBEE project at gmail.com.
Wonderful stuff. Listen, Chris, thank you so much for your time this morning and finding out something I've learnt. As I say, I knew very little about your organisation, but I do know a lot more now, thanks to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much indeed. And by the way, before you go, you'll stay safe, won't you?
I will. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much indeed. There we are. That's Chris Lockyer, who's more or less in charge of the Sid Valley Biodiversity Group.
Yeah.
Yes, you've got me dangling on a string, according to the chairman of the board. Famous birthday today, Helen Mirren, the UK actress who was in many things, including Calendar Girls, 75 today. Kate Beckinsale, the UK actress who was in many films, including Pearl Harbor, 47 today. Mick Jagger, the singer for the Rolling Stones, for those of you who have no idea, you've been on another planet. He's 77 today. George Bernard Shaw, even, the Irish playwright, born on this day in 1856. Roger Taylor, the drummer with Queen, 71 today. The rap singer Stormzy, 27 today. Susan George, the UK actress who was in many things, including Straw Dogs and Up the Junction, 70 today. The UK politician Liz Truss, 45 today. And Mary Miller, the actress who played Rose in Keeping Up Appearances, born on this day in 1936. Danny LaRue, the UK entertainer, born on this day in 1927. Laurie McMenemy, the ex-Southampton footballer, 84 today. Bobby Hebb, the US singer, had a big hit with Sunny many moons ago, born on this day in 1938. Sandra Bullock, the film actress, who is in many things, including the film Speed, is 56 today. And Joe Jackson, the manager and father of the Jackson family, born on this day in 1928. And finally, Gary Cherone, the singer with Extreme and also Van Halen, 61 today. We've just about done the dust. Let me just tell you that between 12 and 2 this afternoon, Buddy Holly with the Request and Dedication programme. 2 till 4, it's Nigel Tent and the beat goes on. 4 till 6, Nick Muir and Memory Lane. 6 till 9, it's Brian Justice and 60s. And then between 9 and 12, it's Non-Stop Pop. Next week on the programme, we'll be talking Green Fingers, all about gardening, Wild Woodbury, and also we'll be talking to a book writer. So three conversations on next week's programme. We've done and dusted. Buddy Holly's next. Thank you for your company. Going to leave you with this one from Katie Lang called Constant Craving. Take care and stay safe.